The New American Magazine has just produced a special report about the future of technology, including AI. What will that future look like? Will it be a dystopian nightmare or something far more positive where technological progress continues to enrich and bless our lives? Coming up, three authors of our special report will join me for a roundtable discussion about what we might expect. And of course, about how we can help shape our own future for the better. This is Beyond the Cover with your host, Gary Benoit. And today we have with us three of the authors of our special report on technology in the future. And to my left, we have Dennis Barrett, who is the publisher for the New American Magazine. And we also have Jeff Lindsay, who is chemical engineer. And we have Steve Monta, who is the executive senior editor for the magazine. Gentlemen, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Gary.
Now, Jeff, I'd like to start with you because you wrote the cover story for our special report. And you talked about the future of technology. So very simply, what is that future? Tell us about the good, the bad, and the ugly as you see it.
That's a great question. The future of technology is... Well, you can't see the future, you don't know, but there are some very important currents and trends we have to pay attention to. AI right now is one of the hottest topics in the news. I'm seeing all sorts of corporations, from medicine to law to sports, entertainment, art, of course. They're all rushing to take advantage of some of the new tools that have come out with artificial intelligence. And if you're not paying attention to it, it's very similar to what happened when the computer first came out. Well, computers have been around for a long time in various forms, but they became personal when personal computers came out. Everybody could now access it, and that opened up tremendous new opportunities. And some jobs were destroyed by computers. There was a lot of fear when that first became such a big factor. But we found out that computers have helped us become much more productive as a society. We can do all sorts of things easily we couldn't do before. AI is a giant leap beyond what we had with computers alone. AI is taking massive amounts of data and computer software that is able to, in some ways, act human. It's able to parse text. It's able to speak or simulate a lot of human type of thinking, supposedly. And these new tools, ChatGPT, most popular, also Bard by Google, are able to, you can talk with them. You can ask questions like, hey, tell me about chlorophyll. How does that work? Or who was Darwin? What did he do? Or what's happening in this area? What does it mean? And it can summarize things, give you insights, and talk back as if you were talking to a supposedly intelligent person. And I say supposedly, there's some qualifications to that. But this is a new level of technology that enables computer-driven systems to take over all sorts of tasks that makes some people very afraid, to do all sorts of things that couldn't be done in the past. And that brings a lot of opportunities, but also a lot of threats. It is very powerful computer-aided technology that we really need to understand. So we talk about some of the pros, some of the cons, some of the weaknesses in the article, and there's a lot of stories I love to share, but that's just a quick overview.
Okay. Now, Steve, you did an article where you didn't talk about the pros as well as the cons. You basically focused on the cons because in your article, you were looking at the surveillance state.
Well, yeah, and that's not a new thing either. I mean, a lot of the technology for mass surveillance and data mining and this sort of thing is not come of age with AI. Although, I mean, the problem is that AI obviously has the potential to amplify the power of these pre-existing technologies manyfold. But, you know, both Jeff and I spent time in the People's Republic of China, and we saw firsthand kind of how that has been deployed to great effect, if your goal is to have absolute ascendancy over the actions and even the thoughts of an entire population. In the case of China, a very large population. We saw how just unbelievable banks of surveillance cameras, CCTV cameras, are deployed over the highways, and everywhere you go, it's just like that'd be 50 of them in a big bar across the road every few hundred yards. And many of them will flash very brightly as you drive under them just to let you know that they're watching you. And they're actually being monitored. The police force there has thousands of people who do nothing but stare at computer screens all day, watching pedestrians, watching traffic, watching people buying groceries and so forth and so on. So that's hardly novel technology. On the other hand, some of the other stuff that has been deployed there used very effectively to cancel people. Jeff was telling me just before we started about a Chinese comedian who was canceled last week for making some comments that apparently were construed as being insulting to the Communist Party and to the People's Liberation Army and so forth. And so he was, as is typically the case, removed from all of his social media, which in China means not only the inability to communicate, but also the inability to travel and to buy and sell and everything else, because it's all accomplished through these all-purpose apps, particularly WeChat, that are used there. So the fear is, well, could this come here? And I think, that is, we sort of tongue-in-cheek called that, tyranny with, or I guess totalitarianism with Chinese characteristics. So here it's going to have a slightly different form, but it's already taking shape. So while our government may be limited, at least in theory, in its ability to collect and act upon mass data to criminalize, pre-crime a la Minority Report or something like that, in practice, what we're seeing in the West is this kind of unholy alliance between the government and compliant major corporations, banks, tech corporations, and so forth, who do the bidding of the FBI, the CIA, and government in general to enforce this increasingly suffocating regime of political correctness and woke ideology. And the end is the same, because we all know now what happens if you say something on Facebook or YouTube or anything that is considered too controversial. You can get canceled. You can get kicked off your social media accounts. And there have been cases where people have even, had their credit cards canceled, their bank accounts closed, all this kind of thing. They're still somewhat isolated. It hasn't become systemic yet. But certainly, it's being beta tested in places like China. Right. And the potential for it coming here is very great indeed.
And of course, it's going in that direction. Mm-hmm. Now, Dennis, in your own piece, You really looked into the future, because you were talking about AI, artificial intelligence, and where that could take us. Worst possible scenario, maybe even the end of man, the end of humanity. But it's not inevitable either. So what are your thoughts regarding that?
Well, it's not inevitable. But one thing that I think I find most interesting about AI is the prospect, whatever it may be, of the achievement of artificial general intelligence, which would be the supercomputer equivalent, if you will, of AI, as opposed to a limited AI that can solve certain problems now or play chess, but an artificial general intelligence which can, with superhuman levels of ability, interact with the world and create new solutions that people themselves cannot come up with. And it's ideally would be much faster than any human mind, would have access to much more information than any other human mind would, and would therefore be quite a bit more powerful in theory than any human or group of humans could be. Now, I wouldn't necessarily be someone who would say, that's inevitable, it's going to happen. I actually don't think it may, I think it may not happen. But the real action is going to be in the minds of our technocratic elite leadership internationally, and what do they believe about this, and what actions will they take based on their beliefs. That's where I think the real challenge will come in. So, and I talk about it in Endgame quite a bit in the book that I wrote. Specifically, if you are in that class and you believe there are A, far too many people already, mm-hmm. and B, most of those people will be made completely non-essential because they'll be replaced in their careers 100% by AI, by an artificial general intelligence, now what do you do from a policy point of view? And I think if you project those lines, it doesn't really matter what the actual prospect of AGI would be. What really matters is the belief system of those who may believe it's inevitable and how they might act on that belief system. Mm. And we've seen people act on terrible belief systems historically, just within the 20th century, for instance, and the outcomes were, shall we say, less than ideal. They were quite generally bloody. And I don't think we want to ever see that again, but we're setting ourselves up for a situation where we have a technocratic elite class that seems to believe that there will be too many non-essential people. The soft, fuzzy version of that would be, and you've seen this bandied about, the use of UBI, Universal Basic Income. So people won't be able to have careers any longer. They'll be out of work because of AGI. What do we do with those people? Well, we have to give them a few scraps from the table to let them live. And ultimately, like the World Economic Forum says, you'll own nothing and be happy.
In a 15-minute city.
In a 15-minute city.
5-minute, 3-minute, 2-minute.
Yeah. So the action in my mind is really going to be, what do the technocratic elites do from a policy standpoint based on any beliefs they might have about the relative potential to achieve an artificial general intelligence.
Now, there are transhumanists who believe that this would be a very good thing because they look upon biology or a biological unit as being fundamentally flawed. For one thing, we all die. From the point of view of God or eternity, they look at AI basically as replacing God or them becoming gods on earth through AI. Mm-hmm. And so if you look at it that way, where you could become a god on earth, what's to stop such a person from mass murder, from killing just about everybody, getting rid of all these so-called biological units?
Well, I mean, you know, a lot of this stems in the first instance from this long-held conceit that we see, this characteristic particularly of Western culture, this metaphor that goes back several centuries, at least to the time of Descartes and so forth, perhaps earlier than that, to the effect that human beings are really a sort of a meat machine. You know, all organic beings, culminating in humans, are completely comparable to and commensurable with the machines that we build, except that they're more complex. And so this is a very, you know, this is an idea that I encountered when I did my graduate work in linguistics, this idea that we're meat machines and human language and everything else that we produce, you know, art and so forth and so on, are really just sort of a wetware computer program or the output from a wetware computer program. So this metaphor is a powerful one, and it is what informs a lot of the transhumanists and so forth. The idea is if we're merely very complex machines, nothing more, then it stands to reason that we, like any other machine, it can be improved by tinkering. It can be modified. It can be harmonized with machine, with man-made contrivances, you know, a la cyborgs and this kind of thing. Okay. On the other hand, it seems to me that one doesn't even have to you know, have religious faith in the reality of a soul, although that helps, okay? But even aside from that, if you look at, you know, and as I did for many years, the phenomenon of human language, there's something about language. We're not going to go into it in depth here, but suffice it me to say that the way humans deploy language, it's not the same as machine language. You know, machine language is this bounded thing. It's binary at its core, whereas human language and beyond that, all forms of human cognition are imminently different in ways that we have yet to fully comprehend. And it's that difference that resides things like spontaneity, creativity, freedom, mm-hmm. love, mm-hmm. and emotions generally, the things that make us human, that will never be replicated except, I think, in very pallid form by machines. However sophisticated AI turns out to be, the problem is people who falsely believe that it can be done.
The ChatGPT right now is a very impressive in many ways. It can really give you the impression you're talking to a human, and a very educated, confident, often arrogant human. And if you don't know what's going on, if you're not paying attention, it can lead you down all sorts of strange pathways, because this tool is really very stupid. It's a language model that knows tons of language and can see your sentences, throw out similar things that seem to match, and make it look like it's telling even a very detailed story. But it is fundamentally dishonest. It is an extremely effective misinformation tool, which I have found in case after case. But when you look carefully at their results, you'll find out many times what they're saying is just garbage. It's word salad. They're great at making this word salad, you know, they chop it all up, put it out on the plate, and put some garnishes on it. It looks really great, but you don't know where it came from, or if it's even edible, or if it's toxic. These word salads they spew out, many people think that these are valid answers, and they are very confident in the answers that they give you. Yes, absolutely, here's the quote, and it will even give you sometimes a page number or reference and give you a quote explaining something. But when you look it up, most of the time, it's just made up. It's truthy, but it's not true. These are wonderful tools of misinformation. And I think right now, even though we don't know how long it's going to take to get something that really could be super intelligent, what we have right now is really quite dumb. It's incompetent, but very arrogant. It's the perfect thing to run an election or to get elected into many mm-hmm. offices in the country. And it's also a great tool for misinformation. So I've noticed both of these tools, Bard and ChatGPT, have these filters that push things toward the ideologies of the left. And if you ask the wrong questions, sometimes you'll even be shut down and criticized for thinking that way. So there are left-leaning tools built in, filters, censorship devices, and the problem is these are so popular and they're so useful for many things if you find the right sweet spot. They really can be useful, and I use them every day now in my work, but you can't trust them. These are going to be used by everybody for lesson plans, for writing their articles as a so-called journalist, for speeches, it's being used for books, it's being used for publications, it's being used for all sorts of things. It is going to influence thought at a profound level in many, many ways. If we don't understand that and push back or come up with our own tools to do the same with true sources and without the left-leaning filters, we're going to have a great time for the totalitarians and a tough time for the cause of liberty. But we can use these tools for good. And I think we need to be aware of these pros and cons right now. Will it ever get to that level beyond just being a word salad maker? I'm not sure. Right now, I'm not at all impressed that these are ready to take over the world. But they're ready they're ready for others to use them to influence us and give us official narratives and misinformation in private public partnerships as the World Economic Forum is pushing for. So they're there. We need to be aware of what they're doing.
And I'm sorry, go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, I agree with Jeff that a very important concern that people have raised about this is where are we on the growth curve of this technology? Are we near the top of it? Is this kind of at the peak, what we're seeing with ChatGPT-4? Are we sort of still at a ground level? And the real modern takeoff point for current artificial intelligence was 2012. There was a real watershed moment in 2012 with the achievement of an image recognition program for AI, and everything has been built from there. So there was pre-2012 AI, which kind of hit what was called an AI winter, and its development was kind of slow. There wasn't a lot of progress. That achievement in 2012 took place, and now we're on a new growth curve, an accelerating growth curve, and I think we're seeing a positive feedback loop in the technology. So from my point of view, I think we're just sort of at the beginning. ChatGPT-4, for me, I think of it in terms of the previous personal computer revolution as a 486DX Intel chip. Mm-hmm. And of course, that's a long time ago, and it was a pretty big technical innovation when it came out, but we look at that now as an antique and slow, bad old days. 10 years from now, 5 years from now, I think we're going to see tremendous growth and innovation in AI, and it's going to be hard for us to predict exactly what it's going to achieve.
We may see innovation. Those winters you talked about were when the government was funding AI, winter. When the government quit funding, innovation happened. Right now, the strangest thing, the gurus of AI, Sam Altman, the founder of OpenAI, the company that sold $10 billion to Microsoft, that AI, it's got everybody so excited. He's out there telling us, you know, I'm really getting scared of my product. We need the government to step in and help to keep us safe. We need regulation. So when the big would-be monopolists are starting to say, oh, you know, we need some regulation, really tough regulation to save us all, or we're all going to, that's when I really get worried, because the government's going to step in, they're going to start regulating, and then the innovation will be shut down and the authoritarian applications will be ramped up.
Or it'll be channeled, and there'll be a few privileged companies that will be allowed to innovate, and new entrants will be barred, as what you have in the auto industry, for example.
Everywhere government can get, industry can get their hands on government, that's what happens.
It'd be nice from AI, from OpenAI standpoint, for instance, for its up-and-coming competitors to suddenly run into a regulatory roadblock, so they have a nice privileged protected position.
That's it.
And they can maintain that lead through regulation rather than through future innovation.
That seems to be the goal.
Yeah.
So we've talked about obviously the scary stuff, but Dennis and I were having a nice conversation the other day, and I asked Dennis. I said, "Well, all of the other next big things in the history of technology have always ultimately owed their growth and acceptance to market-driven things. I mean, sometimes government's there at the start, like with the space race, but the fact is that." Ultimately it turned out the consumer demand for satellites was what drove space technology, not so much the idea that, well, someday we may put boots on Mars, although maybe now SpaceX is challenging that. But for decades, that's what drove progress in space technology, was the consumer demand for what satellites could give us. And we have GPS and so forth and so on. So my question is, it almost sounds like ChatGPT started out as sort of a fun little thing, a gizmo, as it were, and it's now being talked about as a way to shape the narrative, all these kind of government-centered things. But what sort of market-driven incentives and interests are likely to to bring out the positive side of this.
There's numerous tailored applications of AI. Right now, dozens of companies are either they're purchasing ChatGPT's tools, they have an API that it's called that they can plug in and start using for their own databases, their own documents. Other people are using AI in different forms. I work with intellectual property, with patents is a big part of my career. And the best tool that's out there is from Japan, wonderful tool that is a patent searching tool. But normal patent searching is very difficult. You have to put in the right keywords, and you're going to get documents that match those keywords, but you might miss the ones that are most relevant. It understands the concept. You can describe the concept. I'm looking for a semiconductor device that can do this. And it can understand that concept and find things that might use completely different language. In fact, often do use different foreign languages. And it comes back with excellent results, better than anything I've seen from other commercial tools. So that's one example of specific problems that can be solved very accurately. For medicine, where you've got to, for pharmaceuticals, where you've got to scan numerous compounds, and now we're getting better predictive computer technologies to predict what a change in a group might do to a drug or a product. AI can be a way to do tons and tons of dirty work with a high level of intelligence, targeted to do the right things and solve real problems.
How about vaccine development?
Vaccine development too, yes.
I hate to open that can of worms, yes, but you know, yes. One has to wonder. I mean, that's the problem with vaccines, is that there are so many variables that normally to develop a vaccine with any semblance of reliability takes years, if not decades,
right.
Which is one, and this is not to go off on a tangent, but that's one reason we've been so concerned about the COVID vaccines, is that they were developed so very quickly, and presumably without the aid of infallible AI.
Mm-hmm. Maybe you have any thoughts about the use of AI or the use of technology in general to safeguard our freedoms.
Well, full disclosure, we did use AI to produce this issue. The cover, I guess, is AI generated.
That's
the cover artwork, and I think we indicate that, so we're not trying to sneak in past people, and we have an entire article dedicated to AI artwork. But
as I walked into the studio, I came past the John Birch Society library. Mm-hmm. It was a massive amount of fascinating books that deal with all sorts of issues of history. If we had books like Endgame and the Writings of the Founding Fathers and numerous other books scanned and used to train an AI engine with an understanding of how do we support freedom, how do we recognize corruption, what is good in law, what is bad in law, we could have our own fact checker that could be countering the fact checkers, but give better, not just truthy, but truthful information to counter that. This could be a very effective tool for helping to see through the lies that government tells us, which is why we're going to need regulation to stop those kind of tools.
Now, Jeff, you mentioned Endgame, and I have a copy.
Oh, thank
copy
you.
Of Endgame here, and of course, this is by Dennis Merritt. And Dennis, most of that book paints a very, very dark picture, so to speak.
It's fairly grim.
Very grim, in terms of there being an organized plan. People who are working to use AI and use the technology for world control. And where one of the scenarios could even be the elimination of the human race. And of course, that fits right into the depopulation program that these people have been following for many, many years.
Right.
But at the end of your book, you also offer hope. So why don't you tell us about that?
Well, there's two elements of that. First, if we are going to save our constitutional republic from whatever the case may be, it doesn't necessarily mean to be AI, whatever the situation is, if we want to embellish, restore, improve our constitutional republic and our adherence to our Constitution. First of all, we all have to be made cognizant, aware, and understand the challenges and threats that we may face, whatever they may be. So most of that book is to describe what some of these specific threats are in light of COVID-19, the pandemic itself, and the response to the pandemic, so people can understand some of those threats, where they come from, the history of them, and where they potentially, if you draw the lines forward, where they might take us. Those things, while grim, do not have to come to pass. And that's the key thing. That's the next step, which is once you're informed, you can take proper action. I talked earlier in another interview about traditional American civic virtue and understanding your role as an American citizen at the local level, but even before that, really local within your family, but at the local level, within your local communities, at your state level, who you ask for representation, how you support that representation. All of those things become much more urgent, and you become much more capable of dealing with them urgently if you're well informed about the challenges coming at them. And you can be a more effective citizen, whether that means just in helping to inform your neighbor so your neighbor understands and starts to put the pieces together, or whether that means you run for office. Typical traditional American virtue within our constitutional republic, as our founding fathers pointed out, is going to be necessary for retaining that constitution and that republic moving forward. Absent that, we don't really have a choice, or a chance for that matter. So,
obviously the AI genie is not going to be put back in the bottle again.
And it does not have to be. It's like most other technologies, Gary. Any technology can be used for good outcomes. And many of those same technologies, in a sense, are dual or multi-use, and in the wrong hands with the wrong motivation can lead to really terrible outcomes. I think AI is just like that with regard to, say, nuclear energy. Nuclear energy, wonderful technology that can power our entire civilization cheaply and safely and in perpetuity almost. AI, just like that, could be a great boon to humanity. Just like nuclear power, on the other side of things, used by tyrants and dictators and megalomaniacs, can be a threat to massive numbers of people. AI used for ill gains could be similarly dangerous. And much of chemistry is the same way. Our technology, generally speaking, is of that nature. So it behooves us as a people to make sure that we're well informed about what the capabilities are, what the good outcomes could be, what the bad outcomes could be, and to help our civilization choose wisely.
Well, thank you very much, gentlemen. And of course, for people to become well informed, we recommend that you go directly to the special report and read the contents therein, and also go to Dennis Barron's book, Endgame, COVID and the Dark State Quest for Bio-Digital Convergence in a Transhumanist World. And we'll put links in the description for this video so that you'll be able to access those materials. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Sophia paused before the door. It read, Department of Bio-Digital Convergence. Just inside was a new world, a better world, the one of everlasting life, of no pain, of no loss, of no problem. She entered the chamber and her surroundings changed. She saw around her an infinite field of waving golden grain surmounted by cloudless blue sky. The AI voice whispered gently in her mind, Welcome to the singularity. She couldn't see it and couldn't feel it, but her body had almost instantly been covered by a swarm of tiny gray multi-legged bots that melted through her clothes and into her skin. Not perceiving the nightmare, her eyes had already been consumed and the rest of her body was dissolving as the bots digested her flesh. She felt only a warmth suffusing her being. Drowsy, she drifted to sleep, and her last thought was one of panic. Would she ever wake? Could a nightmare vision like this be an outcome of the much-hyped transhumanist technological singularity? Enter the world of the future as illuminated by the experience of the past in Endgame, the new book by Dennis Barron, the publisher of The New American Magazine, and find out how the disastrous COVID pandemic response fits with the technocratic elite's thirst to create a transhumanist utopia. Get Endgame from shopjbs.org with free shipping with code ENDSHIP, ENDSHIP. Or get Endgame and the Great Reset Collector's Issue of The New American Magazine and get free shipping plus an additional 20% off both with code N20, END20.